Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to another Scanline Media podcast. We're here for the Arfie cast. I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Jennifer Unkle.
There might be several Arfie casts at this point, unclear to us, but Starfield has happened to us, and we got thoughts on that.
Yeah, as Bethesda has built it themselves, this is the first original setting they've come up with in 25 years, and they've put pretty much everything they can into this one, to the point where Todd Howard was routinely leaving behind his Fallout 76 responsibilities to be like, I'm gonna go work on Starfield some more. Which didn't turn out well for Fallout 76, but seems to have turned out okay for this game.
Well, Fallout 76, I believe, still has been a monetary success, even if it doesn't have a lot of respect, but it is very funny, like, you know, they're not quite putting it this way, but them being, like proudly, you know, like, beaming like a little kid and going, we had a new idea for the first time in 20 years. You're like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it really is something. Basically, as every other studio has started to get into these protracted development times, Bethesda had already been there, so it's just gotten much, much worse for them. Mm-hmm. To the point where they announced Elder Scrolls 6, what, like 2018 or 2019 or something?
Mm-hmm. And then earlier this year, and by earlier this year, I mean like a month ago, they said, yeah, we're starting development. And I'm like, then why did you announce it?
it had been so long since Skyrim that they had to say, like, yeah, don't worry, new one coming eventually.
But yeah, so Starfield is a project they have apparently had in their minds in some form since 1994, but the actual work on it began after Fallout 4 hit in 2015. So about 8 years to get this one out, which honestly, given the scope of it, isn't that ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy long time, but as Jen mentioned, we're in an era where everything, all AAA games take way too long, and also this is a studio that already has taken too long. So, despite the, like, people wringing their hands over the delays, yeah, here is Starfield, and I feel like it didn't take that crazy long, and it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I came in with some pretty low expectations overall just because I had played Fallout 4. Fallout 4 was kind of a miserable game in many respects. So going into this, I was like, well, if it's going to be more Fallout 4, I probably won't play it for more than 5 hours. But I think I'm approaching the 30 to 35 hour mark. So,
and yet it kind of is more Fallout 4.
A little.
I mean, a lot of, right? There's a lot of game here so that you can fit a lot in it, but it's like they're doing the Fallout 4 crafting and weapon stuff. They're doing the Fallout 4 base building stuff. They're doing the Fallout 4 NPC recruiting stuff.
That is true, yeah. To the point where you have to fabricate your own furniture for your apartment, even though it's like, can't I just go to a catalog and buy it? No, you have to go find fabric and iron and zinc and all that stuff, and it's like, really could appreciate a catalog right about now.
And it's part of the game I haven't engaged with very much, and I would like to get the benefits of it, but as of this point, where I don't know, I've played maybe like 8 hours, I would guess, of the game. Maybe six, I don't know, I often overestimate these things.
Gang, this is me checking right after we finish recording. It's 14 hours. I can't believe it's 14 hours. Are you kidding? I have so much I have to do. I have so much I have been doing, and somehow I've played this game for 14 hours already. 14 hours. Anyway, back to it.
But, I would greatly benefit from some of the base building and crafting stuff, but it's so fucking annoying I haven't bothered. I go in and it's like, okay, you if you want to craft like you know, it's like if you want to craft a you know, iron extractor, right? It's like, okay, to build the iron extractor, you need 5 exhaust manifolds. And I'm like, okay, how do I want to get an exhaust manifold? It's like, okay, well, you have to go to a different crafting station and, you know, use iron and zinc to, and it's like, why can't you just tell me this all at once? Why do I have to make like 5 different stops? You're treating this like I'm dealing with like 7 different companies, right? This is all one game.
And it's funny because by contrast, the navigation in this game is dead simple to the point where you can open up your map at any point, select a location, and the game will just figure out how to get there for you, as long as you have the fuel.
Yeah, it's the most... By the way, how is it? Do you just refill on fuel by landing? Does it just happen?
It refills every time you go between grav jumps, basically. So fuel only counts for grav jumps.
But you can do any... What? Wait, what?
Fuel in this case only refers to the number of jumps you can take at a single time before you have to stop and reorganize where you're going, basically.
But, like, it's a difference between, like, okay, if you have to jump from Alpha Centauri to, like, I don't know, to Betelgeuse. I don't think Betelgeuse is actually in this game. But if you had to do that jump and it's like, okay, that's 4 jumps, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is fuel is, oh, you might be able to just hold X and jump there. But if you don't have enough fuel, you're kind of have to hold X to jump to a system and then press start and select it and hold X again and press start and hold X. It's just busy work.
That is correct. And
why are they like this?
Because you can get better ships that remove the busy work because they can jump further.
But the ships don't matter very much. I mean, like, the things that matter about a ship, really, right, are how much, like, it's weapons, it's shields, and how much it can hold. And it's like, I know that's what matters in most games that have ships, right? But other things that often matter are things like, you know, how far can it travel? How fast can it go? Those things do not matter in this game.
It can matter depending on what kind of fight you're getting into. And ships with better speed tend to make it out better in dogfights and stuff.
That's not been my experience, but I guess I haven't experimented with that many ships. I've tried like 3 different ships, basically. But like, the faster you go, the worse your ship turns. And so in a dogfight, it seems like the best thing to do is to get on someone's tail and go 15 miles an hour.
At the same time, there are times where you're going to pick a fight and the ship will just be so much more powerful, or you'll get ambushed, so you need to just get the fuck out of there.
True, but at that point, it doesn't matter how good your engines are, because you're not going to outrun them. You just need to put your points in grav and jump away, and hope your shields will hold.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny that we're opening with all the criticisms, right? Which, you know, well, not all of them. There are more, right? But, like... We're doing this, right? Like, I didn't just, unlike Shard Amuro, I'm not going to say I came here to laugh at you, right? Like, I didn't come here because I think Starfield sucks ass. I came here because I think Starfield is the best game they've made since Oblivion.
I think I would agree with that, yeah. As much as I enjoyed my time with Skyrim, like, I put over 100 hours into that game, in college when I should have been in classes instead. Mm-hmm. But whatever. Yeah, Starfield has a very fun cast of characters, and it's just good at getting you into absolutely bizarre situations that play out in fun ways.
So tell me about the character build you're going for, and like any like you know, interesting like traits you picked to start with.
So I went with Scoundrel, which is funny because my Scoundrel is also, what's that word when someone likes to be alone and stuff?
Loner?
No, not that. Oh, they're a, They're an introvert spacer scoundrel. So
I see.
They have less oxygen and stuff when they're running around on a planet's surface, but they excel within space. And scoundrel's a fun background because every once in a while a guard will come up and they'll say, doesn't say anything on your profile other than troublemaker, so I guess go about what you're doing, but if you cause shit, I have my eyes on you. It also means I could occasionally get a bit ruthless in dialogue options, just being like, hey, I know what's up. You better do what I tell you to, or you're gonna get fucked over.
Huh. Yeah, I picked Ronin for that, which has some... I don't necessarily love the, like, oriental fetishization that happens in parts of this game, right? But it's also, like, I don't know, it's Maul Katana stuff. It's pretty harmless, I guess. And Ronin is the one where it's like, yeah, you're a mercenary who just ran around with a sword, and people think that's pretty fucked up.
I do know at least one friend who ended up... because you can basically pick various traits that have both advantages and disadvantages. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just straight up disadvantages, and in order to spice things up, they chose the one that's like, oh yeah, you have a constant bounty on you, so people are just coming to kill you all the time.
And, I took that one too.
I heard it happens pretty often.
It happens. It's been weird. So first of all, it does actually have an advantage, which is when you're low health, you deal more damage. But like, that's not why you pick it. You pick it because you're like, I want to have something interesting about this character, right? I have had a couple of bounty hunters come to collect. They seem to all have the same dialogue, which is kind of annoying. Like, and it wouldn't be annoying if it was generic dialogue, but it's like kind of specific, like the bounty hunter and one of their crew, like, do this like shtick about like how many credits can you fit in this one particular class of ship. And it's like, it's weird that this same bit comes out of the mouths of different people over and over, but okay.
Yeah, it has some of that classic Bethesda jank to it. I don't know if there's a better word than that, where you'll run around a area, you'll hear one character give you a line about a person that's giving them trouble or whatever, and 50 feet later, you'll come across someone with a completely different voice actor saying the exact same line. And it's like, this is weird.
I feel like some of it is jank and some of it is just kind of like... I feel like we use the term jank in a way that sometimes gives Bethesda cover, right? Because people like to talk about how hard these games are to make and, like, nobody does it like Bethesda, right? Which I think are fair things to say. But also people tie that up with like, well, there are some natural side effects of making a game like this and what it does like on a tech side, and that leads to jank, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it's not jank when you just don't write more than one dialogue, you know? That's just you not doing things.
Yeah, I guess it's a situation where they typically have one of five or one of six lines. They usually get one or two more as you complete faction missions, and, yeah, I can get into what happened when I completed mine later, but it's pretty funny how it's spread out.
Yeah, with the having a bounty on your head thing, yeah, people show up occasionally to collect it. And so far, the thing I've noticed is that if you're in space, their ship is quite good, and they have a couple of them, and that's kind of a problem. If they're on land, it's incredibly easy to deal with. They're all weak as shit. It's also nice. Funny because you'll know if it's the bounty hunters because, I mean, so far I think they always have the same shit, but I only figured that out recently. But I'm like running across a deserted planet and I see another ship coming into land, right? And I'm like, huh. Well, I mean, this happens sometimes. I wonder what their deal is. And so I watch them, and I watch their ship land, and I watch the crew pile out single file and just, like, laser sight runs straight at me. And I'm like, ah, these are bounty hunters, then.
Yeah, there's There's a lot of straight line running towards you in funny moments. Like, having a companion character is a bit of a pain every now and then because, like, they'll wait until you're 150 feet away or a little bit further, and they'll just full on sprint to you. But you can get caught in conversations during that point, and it's very funny because I'll be talking to someone, and suddenly the camera will change to a different room as my companion chimes in before coming back into the room I'm in.
Yeah, okay. I have mostly been without a companion because I just told them to piss off because I found them kind of annoying. But the times I have had them, it's mostly just like, it's weird the added types of barks they've given them, right? Because like, they mostly work like companions in, you know, all the other Bethesda games they've made. But like, they'll chide you for carrying too much, right? Or, I don't know if you've met the Constellation member, I think her name's Andrea, but I was, like, after she first joined my group, she had been fighting some people that I, like, stopped to get the credits off of their body, and she was like, that's good, you have to get everything you can off of their bodies, and I'm like, this is weird.
It's interesting because, like, when you're in a faction mission or doing Constellation missions, each companion has their own set of dialogue for whatever you're doing at the moment. Like, when I was joining the UC Vanguard, there's a hallway towards their, like, testing facility, which is basically a minor propaganda museum where they're talking about all the good the UC has done and the various wars they fought in. And I had Baird alongside me, and after various entries, he would be like, oh, so that's how they're portraying it, huh? Or, yeah, this is a whole load of bullshit.
Yeah. It's interesting the way they do give them, like, some contextual stuff. But, I don't know, it feels very much to me, like, they, like, oh, these are the figures they put on this year's edition of Barbie. You know, it's still very artificial, which, you know, is not a problem. That's what you should expect from these games, but it's just kind of, it's funny and strange at times.
Yeah. Also, if you stick around with them for long enough and do enough things that they like, they usually open up to you and occasionally give you full-on side missions that you'd completely miss otherwise. Like, I spent a lot of time with Barrett, and he kind of opened up about how his husband used to work in this mining colony before the dig site he was working in closed down, and the company sued him into oblivion, took everything he had. And after talking with Barrett about this and getting close enough to him, you can travel over to that mining colony, look up information about the company, revisit the dig site, and more or less make the case for an attorney to go back and re-challenge this company to clear the dead husband's name.
Yeah, that's not bad. I haven't, you know, as I say, I've shoved them in closets and been like, no, leave me alone. So I haven't, I certainly haven't done any companion quests.
Now you're making me think about how Baldur's Gate 3 has a literal companion closet your co-op characters go into when you're not playing with people online.
I think where I've spent most of my time has been the Ryujin Corporation line of quests.
So what is Ryujin? Is that like a mining group? Is it cargo hauling?
I mean, it makes sense once you hear it based on the name. They are like, it is part of that, like, the Oriental fetishization, right? They are a, like, very, like, it's a multicultural group with many ethnic backgrounds, but it is clearly just like they are doing Japanese zaibatsu in space.
Ah, okay.
And mostly it's fine because mostly, like, you take a, like, there's a terminal in, like, New Atlantis where It's just like, here's a, you know, do you want to join Ryujin? Here's a quick questionnaire. And you can answer anything. And they'll be like, all right, come to your interview, right? And the reveal, once you get there, is like, okay, like the person who's interviewing you is like, come in. All right, the person in charge of this program just set it so that whoever took the application was automatically approved. And then they took a vacation, so I have to do all the interviews, and I'm very mad about this.
Oh, that's incredible.
And so, like, for me, she was like, so you said you have a criminal record. That's interesting, because I could have just said, no, I didn't. But I was like, yeah, I've got a criminal record. I was curious what would happen. And ultimately, she's like, all right, fine. Your job is you're an assistant. Okay. Congratulations. Go get me coffee. And you go to the coffee store and you get jumped by apparently the assistant you're replacing, who has a knife and is like, listen, you don't understand. I need to get back into this company. This company doesn't fuck around. I know too many secrets. Which is a classic setup, and it's subverted because you end up having to kill him and you come back and you're able to pick up like, no, he didn't. He didn't know anything. That dude was just out of his mind.
Amazing.
But you come back, and the lady who hired you is like, huh. So you, like, took him out? That's interesting. Maybe you'd be better suited for a different job. And she, like, she's basically, like, you know, metaphorically puts your hand on your shoulder and is like, let me escort you into the corporate espionage room. And so that's what I did for, like, 5 hours, was a bunch of corporate espionage quests. I've completed that whole chain. And there's, first of all, there's a lot of, like, interesting, like, stealth missions and stuff in it. And then I would say 2/3 of the way through, they're like, all right, you've discovered that our biggest corporate rival has stolen one of our projects and is trying to get it to market before we can. So we need you to go steal it back. And for that, you're going to need the end result of the product. This chip that lets you mind control people.
Huh. And
I'm like, yeah?
Funny you should say that, because when we get into the UC stuff, there's a different kind of mind control happening there.
Well, so I can do that now.
Oh, you could just do that to other people? Okay.
I could pull up my scanner, and I hit A on someone, and I hit manipulate, and there's a chance to resist, depending on their stats, but it's like, I have a 90% chance of then being able to just tell them to do stuff.
Damn.
It seems really weirdly integrated. Like, so far, I've just been able to, like, tell them to hit buttons and stuff. Very often, I will use it on someone, and then there's just nothing around they can interact with. But I am interested to see, because I haven't done that much socially since getting it, but that's been where it's been really fucked up, is because I got this thing, this, you know, like, manipulation chip, and then I came back, I did the mission to sort of erase the competition's version of it, and I made it so we were able to do a hostile takeover, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back, and it was like, great, all right, we're about to have a board meeting about whether we should buy this company and also whether we should keep developing this chip. And the CEO is like, use your chip to mind control the board members and make them say yes. And I just have dialogue options that start with bracket manipulation, where I'm like, but don't you think that really you're wrong and you should do exactly what I say? And they're like, I never thought about it that way. I'm like, whoa, all right.
There's a lot of espionage and general fuckery happening around in this game that I appreciate.
So what have you been up to? You said you were doing the United Colony stuff?
Yeah, and I've been doing both branches of that, more or less. I finished one of them, and now I'm into the other. So when you get hired for the United Colonies, you go through this Starship dogfight simulator and stuff like that in order to get your accreditation. And then it's like, okay, in order to become a UC citizen, you'll need to serve here for 10 years. And then obviously things happen that accelerate that significantly. Your first job is a very routine sort of like, okay, here's this one colony we lost contact with. Just take this communication equipment and bring it over to them. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you land, there's blood and bodies everywhere, and there's just one person hiding out in this little room being like, okay, you need to sneak in here. There is a terror morph running around, and we need to take care of it. So yeah,
the terror morph is a thing that is introduced in, like, the tutorial, basically, because you have to do this to get off the... I'm trying to remember exactly how this goes, but, like, right after you, like, touch the relic and stuff, you get set on this quest that ends with you, like, having to go through a lab that's taken over by pirates. And in there, you encounter, like, a bunch of data logs about the terror morphs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This one in particular, it's a very fast monster. It can jump up to where you are and stuff like that, so the way I basically had to outsmart it is power everything up, hope that it didn't notice me, and when it did notice me, I had to jump from building to building, power up its generators, and set the turrets to focus on it instead of me. So it got to a situation where I'm just running down corridors and letting the turrets take care of this alien for me.
Sure. Practical.
Yeah. So the big problem with this Terramorph appearing in this particular colony is the way this universe works is that after 20 years or so of humanity building on any particular planet, when they build stuff up enough, Terramorphs start appearing in order to just strike them down.
Huh.
And the problem is, this is a colony that is very recent, like 2 to 5 years, and if they're suddenly appearing sooner, that is a real problem for any humans wishing to settle anywhere. And as you start uncovering more stuff, you're basically pulled into the upper echelon of the UC as a... You even fight off a fight that happens in New Atlantis. And the thing about these Terramorphs is that they do put up a fight, but also, as they progress, they are able to do some basic mind control on people, and you also get a little bit of it yourself in terms of, like, when it focuses on you, you start hearing people say stuff like, join us, or you hear someone in the corner screaming like, oh, my legs, why did you shoot me there? And it's pretty messed up. I could spoil where the thing ultimately goes, but I'm not sure if you'll have any context to understand how wild it is.
Probably won't. And, you know, I'm sure there are some people who are going to want to, like, we can maybe talk more about it on if we do a subsequent check-in, you know?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. Like, some of the stuff you get entangled with involves clones of war criminals and war criminals that may not necessarily be treated the way the UC claims to have treated them.
Sure, sure. Are we the baddies?
Exactly. I'll also get into briefly the other route I'm doing for the UC, which is I've basically gone undercover with the Crimson Fleet.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went through this whole initiation process where I had to convince the second-in-command, Neva, that I was good enough to hang with her in Delgado. And ever since then, I've been getting information, carting it back to a specific UC interstellar base that is cut off from contact from the rest of the UC, and basically operating in a clandestine manner. And it's pretty fun, because, like, it gives you multiple situations to be like, so you want to keep your cover, but you also ideally want to do it in non-violent ways that won't kill a bunch of people because you're trying to...
Oh, I see. That's what you want. Okay, sure.
That's what the commander wants. So you have options to, like, for example, your first mission, your tryout mission, is you're basically sent out to kill the son of a bitch who ran from the fleet right before you. So you track them down in a ship claiming to be a medic ship. you land there, and when you confront them, you have a few options. You could be like, okay, I'm secretly working undercover, and we need to make sure that you go to this other place because... And basically go into the custody of the UC, because if the Crimson Fleet finds you, they're just gonna fucking kill you. Or you can just board and be like, yeah, I'm gonna kill everyone here unless you kill, let me kill this one person. And I know they're here. You don't need to keep calling them a fake name.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of stuff like that, while also using any opportunity you can to collect information that is vital to the Crimson Fleet and just feed it back to the UC for credit bonuses and stuff.
It's a thing I have a lot of... I guess I'm a little frustrated. I have intentionally not used persuasion very much this game. But I end up falling on both sides of it, where there are times where I have to use the persuasion like mini game, where I don't feel like I should have to. And then there are times when I refuse to use it because the outcome is too ridiculous. So I'll give you an example of both. One of the little side quests I'm on is collecting debts for a bank. I'm playing a very bad person, by the way. I should say that.
Yeah.
But so my character is collecting debts for this bank. And the first one they send me to go after is a con man who took out a whole bunch of loans from different banks and then just peaced out, right? And they're like, we found him. Please go get the money back. We would appreciate it if this didn't get violent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to him and I walk in, and for color, I am wearing, like, you know, rare and legendary gear that is like a Raider spacesuit, which is like red with like armor blocks on it and like a cage over the chest. It looks very sick. And then my head looks like I'm a fucking like Zaku, right? I look fucking scary, and I'm holding a sword, right? And I come in, and this like dude is just like sitting at a table, like eating, like, you know, like nachos in a tube. And he's like, oh, and I'm like, hey, you owe some people some fucking money. And he's like, yeah, I guess I do. I'm amazed you found me. I'm like, yeah, I did. And listen, I've killed a lot of people. You'd be really easy. You should pay your fucking debts. And he's like, I'd rather die. And I'm like, really? That's weird, actually. You'd rather die? All right, well, let me hit the persuade button. And I'm like, no, really, pay the debts. And he's like, all right, all right. I'm like, okay. That felt really bad, actually.
So fun thing about the persuasion system, most of the conversations just have a trust me, bro option. And you'd think that would never work, but I've talked to multiple people, folks like Nora from Journal Updated, where they just hit the trust me, bro option despite not having any points in persuasion. And every once in a while, more often than it should, hitting that will make them be like, oh, okay, critical success. You don't have to choose anything else.
They're staring at this segmented metal visor with like a skull drawn on it in white paint where my face is. And they go, you've got a trustworthy face. But the other example where I didn't want to use it is one of the Ryujin quests where I was trying to get information from an informant. And he was like, listen, you can either pay for it or you can do me a favor. This happens a lot in this game.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't want to pay you any money. What's your favor? And he's like, all right, there's this lady who's trying to kill me. You can find her here. You bring me back her gun as proof that you've killed her, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And so I go and I fly, and she's in the orbit of Saturn. And she's like, oh, you know, like, he sent you, huh? Yeah, the situation's more complicated than he told you. Why don't you dock, and we'll talk about it. I was like, oh, great. I really thought I'd have to, like, take out your engines and do a whole thing. Great. And so I get on, and she's like, yeah, psych, I'm not fucking talking to you. You're here for that guy. That guy is the scum of the earth. He says I'm trying to kill him. That's currently not true, but just because I'm busy, as soon as I'm not, I'm going to fucking murder that son of a bitch. I hate him more than life itself. And you're like, okay. I mean, you could still do that. I could get him off your back if you gave me your gun. And I, like, that's a really cheap proof of, he's like, she's like, go fuck yourself. You know what I, you know, the only thing more potent than my hate for this man is my love of this gun. You could torture me for a decade and I would never give you this gun. Go fuck yourself. And I'm like, then why did you let me on your ship? And she's like, so that I could steal yours after I murdered you. I'm like, oh, that's actually a really good reason. And then, but there's a persuade option. And if you take the persuade option, you could just be like, yeah, but you should just give me the gun. And she'll be like, you're right. It's like, no, I shouldn't be able to do that. Yeah. And so I didn't. I shot her in the face.
Did you go through the whole Mantis quest line, by the way?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I guess I could just talk about this because it's an entertaining story.
Sure.
If you happen to fight with spacers a bunch, eventually you can find a note on one of them talking about a secret base of the Mantis who happened to be...
Yeah, I have like 20 quests that I haven't looked into from data pads from all the spacers I've murdered.
But yeah, the Mantis happened to be like a bounty hunter that played by their own rules, basically a very vigilante sort of character. And if you land there and take out all the spacers, you start collecting audio logs where there's this woman who used to be the Mantis who is trying to leave it all to her son because she just wants to get out of it. And I think she also has like a terminal illness or something.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the at the part where the test would start getting difficult, you do find his body just hanging out there. He happened to fuck up the specific test that requires you to step on certain letters or else the turret is going to mow you down.
He did the Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade.
Yeah, and basically died because of it. And
idiot. In Latin, space begins with an I.
You do have to use a Latin phrase to get through
it. Oh, goddamn.
And by the time you get through that and you, like, destroy the various robots that are guarding it, an audio log plays as you open the doors to the actual lair, and it's basically the Batcave. Like, it's stalactites everywhere. There's the Mantis suit of armor, which is basically their trademark armor, is hanging on the mannequin and stuff. And the audio plays like, I knew you could do it, my son. I knew you had what it took to get here. And,
can you just be the Mantis after that?
Yeah, I took the armor. I took the ship, so I'm basically the Mantis by all accounts.
Does anyone call you that? Do you have any? Have you had any dialogue options to be like, I'm the Mantis, the shadows are my playground?
So I personally haven't, but I've heard people getting into dogfights with spacers, and the spacers go, oh shit, it's the Mantis, run!
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Just like, going total, it's the Bat!
The difference between Starfield and Fallout 4, or Skyrim, for me, is really just, like, clumsy charisma, right? Like, all these games are clunky. All these games are weird. All these games are kind of bad at most of the things they do, really, right? But, like, there is... The way this is written and built just has a sort of awkward charm to it that I'm really enjoying, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, just, you know, having... like... I don't know, maybe this stuff is, maybe I would find this to love in Skyrim, but I don't know, it just didn't connect with me. But stuff like fighting with, running into a fight with, like the Crimson Fleet, right, the organized pirate group, and there are four of them, and I run up and I cut three of them down with a single slash, and the last one I hit, and he falls to the ground with, like, 2 HP left, and he's crawling around, and he's like, give it up, you can't win! And I'm like, this is a strange time for that bark, my friend. Just, like, the way it comes together has this feeling of, like, yeah, it is just, like, It is clumsy but it is so far rarely in a way that feels mean or like obnoxious. It's just kind of like, wow, you know, there's a lot of stuff here and you're really trying a lot of things. And when it's good, it's genuinely good. And when it's bad, it's often kind of cute. So it's okay.
Yeah, it's that thing people love about Oblivion, where people just react in bizarre ways. Like, you have situations that are both glitches and things that are just naturally how the game works that are a little bit inhuman. Like, people just lost their shit with happiness when they realized that when you cause crimes in this game and you get confronted by a police officer or whatever, they have their own version of stop right there, criminal scum, and then pay with your blood.
It's almost verbatim. It's like, wow, you really just did that. It's very funny. I also like, but then also there's parts where it is surprisingly like clever, right? Like, so, as I say, as part of the Ryujin questline, you have to do a lot of corporate espionage and stealth stuff, including there are several times where you have to sneak through, like, a corporate building, right? Where, like, they're on a security lockdown, and you have to go through multiple floors in this long sneaking missions of a government building. And one of them, in order to make things kind of remotely possible without just shooting everyone, I sabotaged their air vents so that the place was being vented with toxic gas, right?
Damn.
Which didn't kill anyone. Because this is a problem they know about. They know they have a carbon monoxide leak, basically. You know, a space carbon monoxide leak. And so as soon as I hit it, there was an alert, and they evacuated the building. Which was like, okay, now I can sneak through without as much trouble, right? The guards that remained all had gas masks. I did not.
Oh.
And so I was mostly staying up high, but there were a few points where I had to drop low. And in one of those times, I got poisoned. I got, like, it's a, like, lung damage, right? And I was like, oh, this is kind of annoying, right? And it was a little frustrating in the moment, but I look back on it really fondly now because I had to quicksave like crazy going through that segment because you know what happens when you have lung damage.
You can't sprint as fast?
There is a little bit of that, but also, sometimes, you cough.
Oh.
And that has an effect on stealth, where I'm, like, hiding in a corner, and I'm like, alright, I just had to wait for this patrol to... And I'm like, oh no! and, yeah, I end up having to do something. Like, the last bit, I got almost to the end of that mission without being spotted, right? And if there's one criticism I have of the Ryujin missions, it's like sometimes they want there to be no witnesses and sometimes they just want there to be no bodies and it's not clear which is which. Turns out this was a no bodies. Figured this one out because the last bit, it was like, no, I don't know how to, with the save I have and how I got here, I don't know what to do to keep myself from getting caught. And so what happens is I just stand up and just sprint through the halls, coughing and crying as toxic gas fills my lungs and tracers fly all around me. And I grab the prototype and I run for the door.
That's good.
So, like, sometimes it even systemically has some pretty smart stuff. So you must have gotten some powers by now, right?
I don't think I have, no.
You don't have any Oh, interesting. Okay, you know about the powers, though, right?
I've heard other people say, do you have powers? And I had to be like, no. I guess you have to play more of the main campaign to get them.
Yes. I'll tell you the specific quest. It's like Into the Unknown, I think is the name of the quest. You should see that one through. Because... Yeah, because you get magic in this game, right?
Nice space magic.
Yeah, and so far I haven't had, like... And it feels pretty close to, like, biotics almost so far. I have 3 powers, and it's going to be a real, like, arson, murder, and jaywalking moment here. I have Grav Field, which, like, in a big AoE, like... disables gravity and makes things start floating around, so like you can use that, like, you know, use it on a group of enemies and suddenly they're like helplessly floating upwards and you can shoot them, right? Mm-hmm. And I have like a grav push where I can just like, you know, Fusroda yeet something, right? And I have endless oxygen where I can regain a little oxygen. I'm like, okay, oh, no, sorry, it's called personal atmosphere, which is a cool name. It's a very dopey power. But it seems like by the UI for this, that there are like 20 of these, maybe. There are quite a few.
Wow.
Maybe more than 20. I don't know. I haven't like intensely stared at it. I just sort of had a moment of like, wow. All right, there are a lot of slots here. And I don't know. I guess like maybe if we do one of these next time I talk about this game, whatever format that's in, I hope to have an actual opinion on these. Right now, I'm just kind of like, huh, that's weird.
Do you get a new one every time you level up, like, 2 times or something?
No, it is event-based. I guess I can tell you that what you learn is that every artifact is linked to a location. And at a certain point, you gain the ability to, like, if you've gotten an artifact, then you get a quest to go to the location associated with it and get another power.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So I think I probably still have a couple left to go, like, as far as I haven't even gotten all the ones from the artifacts I've gathered so far, and I don't know if it's, like, it's staggered out over time. I don't know exactly how it works, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been so busy doing various skullduggery things, like sneaking into a military base by stealing someone's card and whatever, and sneaking through the vents that I haven't really messed with the main stuff very much. But it sounds like it's worth visiting.
I haven't found it particularly compelling as far as like the story and stuff, but I like I'm curious to see what they do with the powers, and I was like, if we're gonna do this podcast where we talk about this, one of us should probably have seen the powers a little bit, you know?
That makes sense. Oh, there's one other scenario I really want to talk about.
Oh yeah, please.
So there's a resort planet. I forget the actual name right now, but when you happen to go into the specific system they happen to be in, you get hailed and they're like, hey, could you land? We have a few things to talk about, specifically about the giant hulking thing floating around our planet right now. And you get the lowdown. You basically hear that no one has been able to successfully hail the ship on their comms. They don't know if they're aliens or what. They don't know if they're attackers. So they want you to board and figure things out. And when you board, you basically find people decked out in Star Trek crew colors. And the thing that happened with them is that this ship was made before the grav drive was invented. So they've spent the last 200 or 300 years traveling through space, siring new generations and having them take over the responsibilities of getting to this specific planet that you just came from. And they think that they have the rights to this planet, but the thing is, a resort company has taken over the planet and they're not willing to give the planet to them. So, sure. Yeah, the most bloodless way I could do it is I basically helped them save up for a grav drive that they could get installed onto their ship, and they got a modern star map, and it's like, okay, yeah, you can go wherever, you just can't get this planet because it's already been taken. But the CEO for that vacation company sure has some other ideas, like, oh yeah, you could just bring them down here and they could work as indentured servants for the next 50 years, and that'd be fine. Or, you know what? I'm not saying how this would happen, but if the ship just happened to explode, that'd be really good for me.
Yeah, I think they've come up with fun scenarios. I don't think the writing is particularly smart in this game, and very often it feels like you're running into, like, old school, like, Knights of the Old Republic, like, help an old lady across the road or shove her into a furnace choices.
Oh, yeah. it's especially stark when comparing it to Baldur's Gate 3, which does a much better job of being like, instead of thinking about choices from good and evil, just think about how your character would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, hopefully whenever Bethesda happens to put out another game in 6 to 8 years, a designer there will be able to figure out how to more closely match the pretty good tone I think Baldur's Gate 3 strikes. But yeah, for now it's very much a mindless thriller sort of game where occasionally you'll stumble into a situation that's like, oh, this is a fun scenario. Even if it's written like shit, it's fun.
It is a thing where, like, yeah, this is the most fun I've had with one of their games in quite a while. I am going to play more. I do still feel like this is a studio that brags constantly about how much writing is in their games. But writing is not a priority to them. They want a lot of it. They don't care if it's good. And I don't understand that. Can you write something good next time, please?
It's definitely a quantity over quality situation. Or a better way to put it is they do want the writing to be good. It's just that they prioritize making scenes over, like, how the scenes come about or whether the scenes are particularly smart.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair.
You basically have someone in their studio being like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you boarded a space cruise liner, got all the dirt about this one person by talking to a bunch of rich assholes who love to gossip, and then held this bank manager hostage for his information? And it's like, yeah, that would be cool. It's very clumsy when it plays out, but it's still cool just because it's that scenario.
I mean, as far as that, like, I did a small quest where I jumped into a thing and basically there was some, like, weird messages from a ship. And I was like, okay, I'll go dock with it, right? And it is two operatives, as it turns out, for Ryujin. So I could be like, oh, hey, what's up? Ryujin for life. Give them the Ryujin salute or whatever. And they were like, hey. And there's, like, a body on the ground. And they're like, see that, like, probe in the middle of the ship here? You need to put this board on it. We'll pay you real good. Slap this circuit board on it. And you're like, just slap it on the outside. And like, yeah, it'll listen, the tech's real good. It'll take care of the rest, which is very like, yeah, no, this is a Bethesda game. But they're like, but it looks like the last person tried this got killed. And like, yeah, you know, just be careful. And you approach it and the probe starts talking to you, and it's like, I'm a probe that was launched from Earth a long time ago. I've been traveling a very long time. I am now sentient. Do not put that board on me. It will mind control me. And it's like, oh gosh, this is a really interesting question. Are robots people? And I'm like, guys, this is not the slam dunk you think it is.
Yeah.
I ended up letting it go. But, like, you know, it wasn't actually an interesting decision. It was just like, do I enslave something for money or do I act humane? Turns out, money's really easy to get in this world. That's the part that makes it, like, I'm fine role-playing a shitty person, but their actions do need to make sense, and it's hard to motivate me with 2,000 credits, because that's like two guns, and I get 90 every time I get in a fight.
Yeah, every time a character is like, I could give you this information, it's going to cost you a steep price, though. And it's just like 2,000 credits, it's like, yeah, sure, whatever, steep price. Yeah, I'm just nodding along with you as you take my pocket change.
They're like, it's going to cost you one Pepsi. No, a bottle, not a can. And you're like, gosh, boy, you're really shaking me down here. Yeah. In conclusion, Starfield is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I'm having a great time with it. And I continue to play it. This game has definitely got its hooks into me. Not to the same degree as Skyrim, but still, like, I've been playing it around 8 or 9 at night occasionally and being like, I'm just going to complete a mission or two. And then it's midnight or one in the morning, and it's like, God damn it.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I don't know, if you know me, you know I'm generally pretty, I don't have a lot of respect for Bethesda or their work, generally speaking. And a lot of that, I think, is born of Skyrim and thinking that Skyrim is really a piece of shit, personally. And I still played, like, 25 hours, probably 30 hours of Skyrim, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of every session, I didn't walk away being, like, I walked away in the beginning being like, huh, I don't feel like I understand this game yet. And by the end, I was like, no, I think I do. I think I really don't like it. And like some of the sessions I had back in Oblivion, I am leaving Starfield sessions being like, no, I think I actually had fun. Okay. Which, yeah, that is the difference. I always end up playing a fair number of hours of these games. Usually it is with the result of being like, nope, don't like this. So.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe by the 150th hour, as Bethesda PR manager Pete Hines has put it, maybe then you'll understand the game and understand whether you like it or not.
I dislike that one of their people said that, but fair, I suppose.
It's funny because every time he gets interviewed, he adds on to that a little bit more. Like, at one point he was like, I think the game really hits its stride within hour 100 or 110. And then a few days later, he's like, you know, by hour 150, I think I'm starting to understand what this game is about. I will give them this. It does seem to be, at least on my end, the most bug-free experience I've had with them. But qualifying that with most, because I've had this inclement weather thing stuck on my fucking HUD for the past 10 hours, and I can't get rid of it, and it's driving me mad.
I've had a few things that stand out are, like, I've had a few... I guess I've only had two crashes, right? But I have had two crashes on Xbox. And then I also had, there's a mini game you have to do basically to get your powers, right? It's like you enter a room and you have to do a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do that thing like 8 to 10 times, right? Which is kind of annoying. I don't think it's a good mini game at all, frankly. It's not hard. It's just kind of annoying. But the first time I did it, I was like, am I doing something wrong? Cause like I hit like, it's like you walk to a spot, right? It's more complicated than that, but I don't want to spoil too much, right? I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you watch to a spot and it activates a thing. And I'm like, I've done this 40 times now and nothing is progressing. Are we good? And I was like, I have a weird feeling. And I saved and loaded the save. And suddenly it was like, oh, and it works now. It's like, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I think their decision to not pause the world around you this time when you're in a conversation, it does feel more natural, but it also leads to some really weird situations where occasionally a pedestrian will just photobomb your conversation or a monster will run straight up and attack. Or in one case, I was talking to an ally and then another ally walked up and just started walking forward into their space and was continuously vibrating as their pathfinding couldn't get around it until they just gave up and walked the other way. I've also seen footage of companions punching each other mid-conversation.
I think along those lines, because I basically have barely had a companion with me at all, the most on those lines I had was there was a scripted conversation playing out in front of me that I wasn't part of. And it was this doctor chewing out a courier for like how late the delivery was. Right. Mm-hmm. And she kept turning to her fellow doctor to be like, Dr. Dale, how long has it been since the last delivery? Dr. Dale was not there. And I was like, and I walked a little further into the building, and like three rooms away, there was Dr. Dale standing at a desk answering the questions. I was like, Okay.
Yeah, conversations just happen between rooms in this game. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. Yep. That's Starfield for now. I depending on how much, you know, we have to say, we may be back for another one of these. But this was fun. I'm glad we did this.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think I'll be playing this game for a lot more time than I expected, and I'm eager to talk about it more with you.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well. But until we do that, folks, thank you so much for joining us. And hey, Jen.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at JBU3. You can find me on co-host at Jen-and-Aster. And I'm on Blue Sky as Spooky Cute Witch.
If you want to find me, I'm at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. That is my at on most services, except for the ones where I'm not there. My DMs are open on Twitter if you want to get something to me about one of the Scanline shows, or just, you know, to message me personally, I suppose. And for all that Scanline stuff, we're at scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. This site existed before our Patreon and was much, much smaller. We're able to do a lot more and cover a lot more because of the support of our patrons. And if you were interested in joining in and helping us out, we would very much appreciate that.
Indeed.
Until next time, folks. Peace out.
See ya.